must know someone like him. He was tall and strong and lean, body like a greyhound, mind's so sharp and keen. But his heart, just like a laurel, grew twisted on itself, till almost everything he did brought pain to someone else. It's not just what you're born with, it's what you choose to bear. It's not how large your share is, but how much you can share. It's not the fights you dream of, but those you really fought. It's not just what you're given, but what you do with what you got. For what's the use of two strong legs if you only run away? What good is the finest voice if you've nothing good to say? What good are strength and muscle if you only push and shove? What's the use of two good ears if you can't hear those you love? It's not just what you're born with, it's what you choose to bear. It's not how large your share is, but how much you can share. It's not the fights you dream of, but those you really fought. It's not just what you're given, but what you do with what you got. Between those who use their neighbor and those who use a cane, between those in constant power and those in constant pain, between those who run to evil and those who cannot run, tell me which ones are the cripples and which ones touch the sun. It's not just what you're born with, it's what you choose to bear. It's not how large your share is, but how much you can share. It's not the fights you dream of, but those you really fought. It's not just what you're given, but what you do with what you got.
And welcome to Detours. I'm Norm Whitman. Today we have an 80% chance of snow, but I guess I don't have to tell you that. We started out today with PsyCon doing What You Do With What You Got, and I have a very, very, very special guest in the studio with me today, and that is the author of that song, the singer of that song, the very special PsyCon.
Well, Norm, I'm happy to be here, and I'm in the studio with the extraordinary Norm Whitman, heard around the world.
Yeah, in some places, bad places. I have friends in low places, as a matter of fact.
You know that great Garth Brooks song by that title, I've Got Friends in Low Places? Now, that's a song I wish I'd written. That's a great song.
That could have been written by me or also or about me. But they're
good friends. You know, Norm, there's good people in low places. I'd worry about you if you had a lot of friends in high places.
Especially in the government.
Well, and in the corporate world and in the banking world. If while we're here in the studio, if some folks drop by from some of the major banks to say hi to you, I'll worry about you on the way home.
They don't give away free samples of those banks. Congress today is trying to decide whether or not they want to raise taxes on those millionaires and billionaires. Personally, I agree with Warren Buffett. He needs to pay more taxes.
Well, they're not. It's not a question of raising taxes. It's putting them back where they were before they were unjustly cut.
That's true. And a lot of people don't realize that. Actually, everybody's getting a tax cut, really, up to $250,000. And that's nothing to sneeze at. I think I could do very well with $250,000.
Well, and I think the way I think about it is when somebody who makes $10 billion a year gets a tax cut, that means that you and I pay more taxes, that working people pay more taxes, that poor people pay more taxes. You know, that money doesn't come from nowhere. It comes out of the pockets of everyday working people.
Yeah, as Warren Buffett pointed out, while he had a top cap of like 15% on his taxes, his secretaries were paying 30 to 40% of their annual wage in taxes. And somehow that just doesn't seem fair. But
now, what would make you say that?
Well, I don't know. I think everybody – I heard a lot of people recently talking about, taxes and taxation without representation. Well, we've always paid taxes. The key part of that back in the Revolution was representation. Those people had no representation. They couldn't vote. And if they gave me a vote, if I wanted to give more tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires, I don't think anybody out there could wonder – how I would vote.
No, I think they'd know. But, you know, I mean, Norm, it's a question of fairness. And, you know, here I agree with the Tea Party that everyday people are paying far too much in taxes. But that's because you've got corporations that pay literally nothing in taxes. Some of the major oil companies pay no taxes whatsoever. And the corporate tax rate is lower, as you were just pointing out, the corporate tax rate is lower than what it is for everyday working people, hardworking people. And that's wrong. You know, that farmers and factory workers and the folks, you know, behind the counter in a fast food restaurant, that's the salt of the earth. And those folks need to keep most of what they've got because they don't make that much to start with. And I don't see anything wrong with if somebody makes $10 million a year investing their money, I don't see why they can't do their fair share to support the public institutions that they enjoy just as much as anybody else.
I believe I heard that Citigroup and General Electric and ExxonMobil paid no tax whatsoever last year. And ExxonMobil, they received $157,000 or $157 million, I believe, in rebates from the IRS. Plus, in the older period in the oil industry, they had to dig quite a few wells in order to find one good one. And so they got used to paying subsidies to oil companies, and I think they pulled in something like $500 million in those subsidies last year. Keep in mind, they paid no tax. Plus, they made the largest record profit for any industry or any business in the history of the world. And that was in 2009.
Okay, well, here's an offer for everybody that's out there. You know, for years, major landowners were paid by the Department of Agriculture not to grow crops. Or so you were paid not to grow cotton so there wouldn't be too much cotton, and you were paid not to grow soybeans so there wouldn't be too many soybeans. I don't know how many soybeans is too many. So I am willing for, you know, not going to come cheap here now, but, you know, for a significant sum of money, I will promise not to write any songs for a year.
Well, I hope nobody takes you up on that at all.
Well, but you know, I mean, I have. It's true. I have made fun of corporations. I admit it. It's true. And, you know, and I have made fun of presidents of the United States. And I have spoken out against the way in which everyday people are treated by the corporations they work for. I would think it would be worth it to say some major corporation to, you know, give me $100,000 a year not to write songs for 12 whole months, Norm. 12 whole months I won't write songs. I might even come down to 50,000.
Well, I hope they don't do it. Because like that song I started out with, What You Do With What You Got, that's actually the first real Cy Con song I ever listened to.
Wait, you heard fake Cy Con songs before that?
No. But it's the first real one that really hit me hard.
Okay, so why do you think that happened?
Because at that time, I was coming in contact with a lot of people who really didn't think they were good enough. Musicians, for example. And I had to say, hey, you go on stage and you play it the best you can, and you sing it the best you can, and that's all anybody can ask. And don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. And that song says everything. It says, it's what you do with what you got and how you value things. This guy might have $50 billion in the bank, but if he's a rat and he's really bad for people, should you look up to him? You know, it's one of those songs that has a message. And all your songs are that way, Cy. They tell a story. They have meaning. They have something to say. And that's what's so important.
You know, that was actually a commission. You know, a lot of the songs that I write because somebody asked me to write them. Would you like to hear that story?
Yeah, tell me the story.
Okay, so, and I don't remember what year the song was written, but it's a good 20, 25 years ago. I got a phone call from Jean Stewart, who's a disability rights activist in New York, and she was editing a special issue of Sing Out magazine. That's the great folk song magazine that was started way, way, way back by Pete Seeger and folks like that. And it was a special issue for the International Year of Disabled Persons. So she called me up, and I didn't know her, but she introduced herself and said what she was doing. She said, and we're looking for disability rights songs, and just songs about disabilities. Have you any suggestions? And I said, well, you know, what about The Blind Fiddler? She said, well, you're the 113th person to suggest that one. Do you know any others? And I thought, and I couldn't think of anything else. She said, well, I'll tell you what. Would you be willing to write one for us? And I said, you know, Gene, yes and no. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be temporarily able-bodied, and I'm actually lucky enough not to have anybody in my family who has a disability, so it's not something that I know anything about. And I try to write about things that I know at least something about. So I said, she said, well, you know what? I can educate you on the topic, and I can send you stuff that I've written, and I can talk to you. And I said, well, you know, if you do that, I'll write the song, but there's a condition. She said, what's the condition? I said, well, I send it to you before anybody else. And if it's not absolutely right, you have to tell me. I don't want anything going out that somebody who is a disabled person wouldn't listen and say, yeah, that's right. That's a good song. She said, well, I'll do that. So I started working on the song, and it came out too long. She had sent me so much great stuff. And I rarely, Norm, write a song that's more than three verses. I try to keep them. You know, I grew up on the 45s, you know, that were never more than 2 minutes and 30 seconds. 2 minutes and 30 seconds, to me, that's the right length for a song. You know, in the old days, Barbie Allen went on for 3.5 days. But so I knew I had to cut it down. And I was probably a Passover Seder at my dad's house. And I had this song in my head. So I would think, ooh, I know what I can do. So I'd go off to the bathroom and write a little bit. You know, you're not supposed to write on the holiday, and you're supposed to be there. About the third time I disappeared, my cousin said, are you all right? And he was a journalist, one of my many first cousins. And I said, yeah, I'm working on this song. He said, let me see it. So then he and I started disappearing. Finally, my old man said, where are you guys going? I'm like, oh nowhere, Pop. But I did get it cut down to the three verses. And it is one of the songs that people just say thank you.
And I want to thank you for writing it. It was just absolutely touching. I can't tell you how many people who have heard it, and it reached into their souls. And as you said, you were able-bodied. I had someone explain to me who was not such, and he just explained to me that all the rest of us are TABS, temporarily able-bodied people. You know, so,
yeah.
Someday somebody is going to look back and say, gee, I remember Cy Conn when he was able-bodied.
There you go, right? actually, some people are surprised I'm still around, but that's another story. Why don't we play a song?
I was thinking about going to your new album, Courage, and I wanted to play the song Custodian. Before we kick it in, you want me to play it first and then you tell us?
Yeah, let's play it first. We've been talking for a while here.
Okay, here's Cy Conn doing Custodian.
I was interviewed last week on public radio. A man called up with something that I didn't know. My name is Grant, he said, here's what you need to hear. I'm a custodian, at least I was until last year. This word custodian, it means to take good care. Something might have hurt the kids, well, I was there. For any troubled kid, I was their right-hand man, the school custodian, there to lend a guiding hand. But now the jobs we did have all been privatized. Our lives, the public good, sold for the lowest price. A corporation does the cleaning work we did. They want the money, not to help some troubled kid. I see them on the street, down at the movie show. My kids rush up to hug me. Grant, where did you go? Their parents say to me, the school's just not the same. If no one cares, custodian is just a name. we're standing at the edge of a forest of lies, where all we hold in common has been privatized, where corporations own every corner of the land. When everything is private, where will freedom stand? When those who only live for profit work to tear this country down, all we have to stand on is our common ground. And only we can find our way back home from here. We are custodians of all that we hold dear. Custodians of all that we hold dear.
And there we had Cy Khan doing Custodian. Do you want to tell us the story behind that,
well,
Cy?
Well, sure. You know, the story is actually in the song itself, Norm, because it's exactly as it starts out. It says, I was interviewed last week on public radio. A man called up with something that I didn't know, and that's exactly what happened. I was my partner and spouse, Elizabeth Minnick, public philosopher, feminist philosopher. She and I had just written a book called The Fox in the Hen House, How Privatization Threatens Democracy. This was, I think, in 2007. And we were both doing interviews, you know, on the radio, of course, and other places around the book. And I was on the labor show on KBOO, KBOO, out of Portland, Oregon, good progressive station. And it was a talk show, and the host took a call and said, yeah, Grant, I figured you'd be calling in. He says, Cy, this is Grant. Grant, this is Cy. And Grant says, Cy, glad to be talking to you. He said, here's something you don't know that you need to know. And he told me the story. This had happened to him. And I basically, Norm, just took it and translated what Grant had told me into a musical form. But it's really his story. And I would say just a very large number of the songs that I write because somebody has told me something or even asked me to write a song about something specific. You know, just like with What You Do With What You Got, where Gene Stewart asked me to write that song, gave me the information and the material. Often I'm working with other people's experiences, other people's histories, other people's stories. So really, that was written just the way it was told to me over the phone. But there is a twist, which is after the song ends, meaning about a year later, I called back. I was trying to get Grant's address so I could send him the CD. And whoever I was talking to, I don't remember who it was, said, well, you know, Cy, there's a happy ending to that story. I said, I didn't know that. Says, yeah, Grant was the president of the union local where he worked. It was a local of the Service Employees International Union of SEIU that represented the school board employees and represented the custodians. And they took the school board to court, and the Oregon court ruled in their favor, and the school board had to offer every one of the custodians their job back. So there's a real victory that came after the song ended.
You know, Cy, you mentioned about privatization. Do you realize the things that the government privatized in Iraq and Afghanistan cost us anywhere from 3 to 10 times as much? And then on top of that, recently when they were talking about privatizing Social Security, they were pointing out that right now the administrative fees are under one penny
right
on a dollar. And if it was privatized, it would automatically jump to over a nickel on every dollar. So this concept of privatization, look what happened with the health insurance industry, how their profits jumped way, way up, and the cost to average working people, some cases, went way out of their range. But that's another sign, another great song from Cy Khan. But we've got some things, we got some business to take care of here.
You better take care of business, Norm.
Support for WYSO comes from listeners like you and Miami Valley Pottery's Holiday Open House, continuing today and tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day, highlighting Far Eastern hand-thrown wood-fired craftsmanship and pottery styles featuring Provence and homage to our predecessors. Information at 767 75 1-800-878-1717 or online at mvpottery.com. And Antioch University PhD in Leadership and Change Program, an interdisciplinary low residency doctoral program designed for working individuals making change in their communities and professions. Information is available online at phd.antioch.edu. And Cy, it's hard being in the studio with Cy Conn because he can make you laugh at a heartbeat. Today's weather.
Right in the middle of trying to read something serious, too, Norm.
Today's weather. There's an 80% chance of snow, and boy, I tell you, it's really coming down outside right now.
See, that's something that's always intrigued me.
The weather?
Well, no, just that there could be an 80% chance of snow, and the snow is coming down.
Yeah, it's closer to 100% if it's already coming.
Well, that's
down.
What I always thought. And yet the weather report will still say there's an 80% chance. But if it's snowing, it's snowing. Does that mean it's only going to snow 80% of the day? And will it stop like for 20% of the day and then start up again?
Well, maybe it's only 80% of the snow is going to fall on any given place at one time.
Oh, 20% now that's a really creative interpretation, Norm.
Well, you know, I go back to that one song from Pete Seeger. English is a creative language. You know, a vegetarian eats vegetables. What does a humanitarian eat?
It's a challenge to the mind. It is. It's a great song, too.
Anyway, tonight there's a 30% chance of snow. I guess it's only going to snow on 30%. Anyhow, the low is going to be around 23. Sunday, there's a 30% chance of snow. High is going to be somewhere around 30. Sunday night, there's a 30% chance of snow. Low around 20. Monday, 20% chance of snow. High is going to be around 26. And Monday night, 20% chance of snow, likely low around 16. I believe the National Weather Service is trying to tell us it's going to snow.
You know, and here I'm sitting thinking about whether I should write a song from the point of view of an individual snowflake who's worried about the 30% and what that means for their future. You know, will I be one of the 7 that make it down or one of the 30 that fall?
Or don't make it down, not
yeah,
along
well,
the way.
Yeah, right. And which is better from the point of view of a snowflake?
That's true.
You know. I'll work on it.
Anyway, here's a brief message.
Don't get nervous this year about all that holiday shopping you have to do. Stay home, log onto your computer, listen to WYSO, and do your shopping at our website. This year, for the first time, we've opened the WYSO Shop. You can get thousands of CDs, books, and DVDs there, and some vinyl, too. And a percentage of every sale goes to your favorite public radio station, WYSO. It's an easy way to shop and keep WYSO strong. Go to WYSO.org and visit the WYSO shop.
And welcome back. I'll tell you, being in here, as I said, with Cy Conn, this man can really get you laughing. He's a fun person to be around.
You know, getting people laughing is a very serious responsibility, Norm, you know? I mean, I actually think it's a contribution to life on the planet because laughter is good for us. And so, therefore, making people laugh, even if they're trying to do your job and, you know, you're interrupting them, well, that's a worthwhile endeavor.
Here's a song that's guaranteed to make people laugh. It's called Who's Watching the Man? It's a good question to be asking today.
There's a big white panel truck been standing on the road all week. Sign on the side says telephone company. But I know that can't be right, 'cause they took out my phone last month. I wonder, is someone listening on me? And I wonder who's watching the man who's watching me. I wonder who's watching the man who's watching the man who's watching me. Who's watching the man 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 who's watching me. Now, I'm not what you'd call a danger to the state. Pay my taxes and I never once will give up hope. But I'd still like to know why there's 3 men in my barn trying to read my electric meter through a telescope. And I wonder who's watching the man who's watching me. I wonder
Who's watching the man? Who's watching the man? Who's watching me? Who's watching the man? 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 Who's watching me?
Vote, so I ain't gonna criticize, 'cause I know that what you pay for is what you get. But there's wires on my roof that wasn't there last week, and I think there's someone living in my TV set. And I wonder who's watching the man who's watching me. I wonder
who's watching the man who's watching the man who's watching me. Who's watching the man? 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 Who's watching me?
We were the world's first colony. Yet maybe it's last 500 years ruled by another land. The violence, the cruelty, the taking of our past. Who dared to hope that peace might be at hand? The iracy that sheltered us and one time kept us safe still breaks its heart upon the English shore. But when the storm is over and the sea lies white as dreams, then peace will rise from these green hills once more. 5 centuries have hardened us to struggle and resist, till neighbors seem like enemies, not friends. Until one day we find within the courage to desist from violence that grows and never ends. The iracy that sheltered us and sometimes kept us safe still breaks its heart upon the English shore. But when the storm is over and the sea lies white as dreams, then peace will rise from these green hills once more. Children's blood can work for peace that lasts beyond all time. Then enemies in other lands may someday staunch the flood of war that breaks all hearts, both yours and mine. The iracy that sheltered us and one time kept us safe still breaks its heart upon the English shore. When the storm is over and the sea lies white as dreams, then peace will rise from these green hills once more. Don Hutto must have been some kind of man, 'cause he sure got a man-sized share of fame. It's not just anybody gets their name put on a building where children are held prisoner in their name. The town of Taylor, Texas, is just an hour from Austin. But when you're there, you're in a world away. Look inside the prison yard, just beyond the chain link fence. You will see young children at their play. You might well stop and ask yourself, what have these young children done to be sentenced to such painful loss and fear? It's all because their mom or dad was caught here without documents, like 12 million others living here. Now you may think all immigrants should go back where they came from, and if they don't, hell, let them rot in jail. But if it was your own daughter in a cell at T-Dawn Huddle, with your grandchild in her arms, how would you feel? What would you say if your own 2 or 4 or 6 or 8 year old was growing up in prison like these kids? Since when in these United States do we put kids in prison because of what we say their parents did? Call it family detention. Say we do it for the children. You're lying to yourself down to the roots. But call it playing politics with children's lives and sanity. You're getting somewhat closer to the truth. So if you're down in Austin, take the highway out to Taylor. Bring some good friends with you for the ride. You might even wear a flag pin to show you still believe in the dream for which so many fought and died. Step out onto the highway, turn to face the prison, stare at those walls till you forget your name. Say a prayer for T-Dawn Huddle, say a prayer for all those children, and close your eyes and hang your head in shame.
And we started that set off with Who's Watching the Man? PsyCon, naturally. Farewell to Ireland. That's PsyCon.
No, Norm, they're watching me and you.
Oh, okay. And we finished up with Hutto. That's on PsyCon's new album, Courage. Psy, I realized something quite a while back. There are people out there who think, you know, they did everything they did on their own. I don't happen to be one of those people. I tend to believe we all fit into the same boat. We're all in that same boat. And I also discovered something else about those other kind of people. And that is, they lack a human quality. You or I, and I venture to say almost all the other people out there, if they saw a small child, say a toddler, getting ready to wander out into traffic, they would do something. They wouldn't stop and say, what color is that child? They wouldn't say, what religion is that child? They wouldn't worry at all. They would just rush over there and stop that child from walking into traffic. And that's because we have empathy. We care. We're in that same boat. But some of these people who tend to not think that way, they would look at that child and say, oh, I don't want to get involved, and just walk away. And that's sad. It's really sad. Psy, Tutto is a great song. Do you want to tell us a little bit of the story of that?
Sure, I do. You know, I would add, just to make the transition to talking about the song Hutto, that some people would look at that child and say, you know, if we could figure out a way to put that child in prison, our corporation could make a couple hundred dollars a day for doing that. And this is I mean, you talked about privatization earlier, Norm. And what privatization is, it's a fancy word for something that's really simple. Part of what I love about my country, the United States of America, is the extent to which everyday people built it, you know? This country was not built by the wealthy. This country was built by hard-working hands, women and men who put things together, and often just as volunteers. You know, so much of what we have, we hold in common. You know, whether it's our public schools, our parks, our wild rivers, these things belong to all of us, and our airwaves. A lot of people don't know this. The airwaves belong to the people of the United States, and they are licensed to nonprofit corporations like WISO, but also to for-profit corporations. But the airways are used by those to whom the government licenses. They belong to us. And so what happens in privatization is these things that belong to us that are done by and for the public, you know, like Abe Lincoln said, by the people, for the people, of the people, maybe not in that order, but with those three modifiers, they're given away to multinational corporations. So they will then run them and sell them back to us and make gigantic profits. And that's what's happening. It's stripping away the public. It's stripping away what we hold in common, what belongs to all of us. Now, that's in the song Custodian, too, where it says, you know, when everything is private, where will freedom stand? So what happened in Hutto is, in 1984, a group of wealthy men in Nashville, Tennessee, got the bright idea that they could run for-profit private prisons, jails, and detention centers. I got that? For-profit prisons, for-profit jails. And they created a corporation called Corrections Corporation of America, which today is the world's largest for-profit private prison corporation. And they make a lot of money doing this. And it just, you know, there's some things shouldn't be for sale.
Out in Arizona, if you've noticed, when they passed that immigration bill out there, the people who were pushing that were actually people who owned private prisons.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And that's bad enough. But a few years ago, the Bush administration decided, speaking of immigration, that they needed a better way to discourage people from coming to this country. They said, what about if when we catch a mother with a three-year-old child, we don't just put the mother in prison, we put the kid in there with him. And that's what they started doing. The T. Don Hutto Residential Center in Taylor, Texas, is a for-profit private immigrant family detention center. And I worked for 30 years at Grassroots Leadership, a totally great organization. Now retired from it, still a great organization. And Grassroots Leadership for the last 30-some years has done civil rights and union and community organizing across the South and in the Southwest. And a dozen years ago, we decided we would take on this appalling idea of imprisoning people for profit and see if we couldn't run it into the ground. And then when we heard that in Hutto, the T. Don Hutto Residential Center in Taylor, Texas, that little kids, and I'm talking about two-year-olds and eight-year-olds and four-year-olds and 15-year-olds, that they were in prison wearing orange jumpsuits behind razor wire with armed guards. Why? Because their parents had been caught without the proper immigration documents, which is true of 12 million people living, working, and paying taxes in the United States. And so Grassroots Leadership took on this impossible task, and to our great amazement, we actually won. And we actually got the federal government to order all of the families taken out of Hutto, and also to say that they weren't going to build the three new immigrant family detention centers that they had said they were going to build. And it's an amazing tribute to the power of a small group of people. You know, Margaret Mead said, the great anthropologist, she said, never doubt that a small group of determined people can change the world. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has. And here was grassroots leadership with seven staff people, you know, taking on the Corrections Corporation of America, taking on the state of Texas, taking on the Department of Homeland Security and the Justice Department, not doing it alone. Like you said, we never do anything alone. We never do anything by ourselves. But working with just a wider range of allies, and we won. And we got those kids out from behind bars.
Change never comes from the top. It always comes from the bottom up, because the top wants to maintain the status quo. But if you want change, Saigon has written a new book, and he tells you how to work the system a little bit. You want to tell him about your book, Sai?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell him the title, because I know, Norm, that you're going to love this title. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you sitting down?
No, I'm standing up.
Well, hold on to something.
Okay.
The title of the book is Creative Community Organizing, A Guide for Rabble-Rousers, Activists, and Quiet Lovers of Justice.
And I think that covers most people.
And the title itself is an organizing project, because I sent out an email to, you know, lots and lots of folks saying, help me name my new book. Here's what it's about. So Mara Levine, you know Mara.
Yeah.
You know, wonderful singer and songwriter and a jewelry maker. She and her mom stayed up late, and they came up with creative community organizing. The great blues musician and social activist Scott Ainsley came up with A Guide for Rabble-Rousers and Activists. So I thought that was a great title. And I walked over to talk to, you know, my partner and spouse, Elizabeth Minnick, and I said, look at this. Isn't this great? Creative Community Organizing, A Guide for Rabble-Rousers and Activists. And Elizabeth said, it's wonderful. And what about all of us quiet lovers of justice? Right? So it's the title itself is an organizing campaign. And it's, you know, what the publisher, Barrett Kohler out of San Francisco, says is that it's actually a political memoir, which is that what I've realized, I didn't know this when I was writing it, but what I've realized since is the book, I wrote the book the way I actually organized. I have worked as a civil rights union and community organizer for almost 50 years. And I don't organize by telling people what to do. I ask them their stories. I tell them stories from other places. I make jokes. You know, I help them learn history. I introduce them to other people they can learn from. And I tell them stories where other people like them, not people like me. You know, I come from a middle-class family. I'm educated. But, you know, but everyday working people, maybe people who don't even have a high school diploma, maybe people who the people on top would say, well, what do they know? Well, they know what working conditions are. They know what possibilities are. They know what they want for their kids and their grandkids. And those are the people that other people like them learn from. It's easy for me to say, well, you should organize and form a union. They're like, yeah, you and who else, buddy, you know? But when you hear it from somebody like you, it's real different.
You mentioned stories. Does your book have stories?
It's, you know, as we used to say, it's chock full.
Okay.
You know, I don't think I've ever said chock full in my entire life.
Could you read us one
of
them?
Well, yeah, you know what? Could we intro it with a song?
Sure can.
Yeah, because I got my start as an organizer, Norm, in the Southern Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. I worked with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, which was the student wing of the Southern Civil Rights Movement. And the first three chapters are stories from that period of my life. And this song, which is called I Have Seen Freedom, is also from that time in my life.
Okay, we'll go right to that song right now.
And then I'll go right into reading the story.
Okay, here's I Have Seen Freedom.
I read in the paper, I watched on the show. They said that it happened a long time ago. The years had gone by, I just didn't know. Working for freedom now. The songs that we sang still ring in my ears. The hope and the glory, the pain and the fears. I just can't believe it's been 45 years. Working for freedom now. Been a long time, but I keep on trying, for I know where I am bound. Been a hard road, but I don't mind Sometimes we stumble, sometimes we fall. Sometimes we stand with our backs to the wall. This road will humble the proudest of all.
Working for freedom now.
Though the road up ahead may stretch out far and long, we must always remember the roads that we've gone. Memory will help us to keep it on.
Working for freedom now. Been a long time, but I keep on trying, for I know where I am bound. Been a hard road, but I don't mind dying. I have seen freedom.
Those who have fallen and given their last have passed on to us what remains of their task. To fight for the future and pray for the past.
Working for freedom now.
The song of their laughter, the step of their feet, the voice of their pain that cries out in our sleep. We'll be judged in the end by the faith that we keep.
Working for freedom now. Been a long time, but I keep on trying, for I know where I am bound. Been a hard road, but I don't mind dying. I have seen freedom.
The wind in the winter is bitter and chill. The cries of the hunted are heard on the hill. I just can't believe there's such suffering still.
Working for freedom now.
The wind blows the summer from fields far away. We stand in the dust in the heat of the day. Our hearts stop so still that there's nothing to say.
Working for freedom now. Been a long time, but I keep on trying, for I know where I am bound. Been a hard road, but I don't mind dying. I have seen freedom.
And there we had Cy Conn doing I Have Seen Freedom.
President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965 into law on August the 6th. It was designed to make real the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, passed in 1870. The right of citizens of the United States to vote, that law says, shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. But it isn't enough for a law to be on the books. It has to be real on the streets. The 15th Amendment for most Southern African Americans might as well have been written on the wind. So the leaders of SNCC decided to test whether the Voting Rights Act of 1965 meant what it said by going up and down the streets in Forest City, Arkansas's African American neighborhoods, trying to get as many people as we could to register to vote. One desperately hot afternoon in late August, working my way down one of the dusty back streets on the black side of town, I stopped by a small house. An ancient-looking woman was rocking on the porch. "Good afternoon, ma'am," I said. She nodded and kept rocking. "I'm from the Freedom Center," I went on. "I wonder if I could talk with you for a minute or two." She nodded again and gestured towards a straight-backed chair opposite her. I sat down. I really wanted to ask her how old she was, but it didn't seem the polite thing to do. She must have guessed my question. "You know," she said, "I was born a slave." In my 45 years as an organizer, there are very few moments when I felt I was in the presence of some kind of special grace. I was 4 years old when we got freed. I didn't know what to say. I just sat there in wonder, speechless. The woman who had been born a slave reached out to me. "How can I help you?" She had rescued me. "Ma'am, the President of the United States has signed a law saying that everyone has the right to vote." She cut me off gently. "I read the papers every day. I know." "I was hoping," I said, "you'd go with me to the courthouse to register to vote." She stopped rocking and leaned forward. "Son," she said, "I'm 106 years old. I don't leave my rocking chair." I was caught between figuring out what year that meant she'd been born and trying to frame a response. All I could come up with was, "Well, if you didn't have to leave your rocking chair, would you register to vote?" It was half a nervous joke. I didn't know what else to say. "I would," she said, "but I don't ever leave my rocking chair." I went back to the Freedom Center. As usual, there are a number of young black men there, some doing different kinds of volunteer work, others just enjoying this one piece of liberated territory in the midst of Forest City. Still in awe at having sat and talked with someone who had been born a slave, I told them what I'd just seen and heard. One of the Michigan locals of the United Auto Workers Union had sent the Forest City SNCC project a brand new bright yellow 4-on-the-floor 3/4-ton Dodge pickup. One of the young men took the keys from where they hung in a nail by the front door and slid into the driver's seat. The others climbed into the cab or the back of the truck. They drove to where her house was located and stepped together onto the porch. They lifted her, still in her rocking chair, carried her outside and placed her, chair and all, in the back of the truck. With the young men in the back kneeling next to her, each with a hand on the chair to steady it, they drove as slowly as they could, weaving their way through the black community, up one street and down another, past the churches and the adjacent graveyards, the segregated elementary school and high school, the little grocery stores, Clay's Funeral Home, and the Freedom Center. As word spread, people poured out onto their porches, into their yards, to watch as she passed, sitting straight and proud in her chair, in the back of the bright yellow pickup they all recognized on sight. Everyone knew who she was, the eldest member of their community, the woman who had been born a slave, and they knew where she was going. When there was no street untraveled, no place in the black community left to trumpet the news, the young men turned towards the courthouse, parking directly in front of the entrance, where everyone passing by could see them. Then they carried her in that throne up the courthouse steps and into the registrar's office so she could register to vote. If that isn't freedom, what is?
What a great story, Cy. And that's just one of the stories in his new book. But that's my friend, Cy Khan. Very, very, very deep and very, very meaningful.
Well, you know, and just amazing to me, Norm, that I really experienced those things. This is I've had a gifted life. And in the, I mean, and this is what I love about organizing is that that's not an everyday story. But these things do happen to you. When you work with people who are fighting for freedom, when you work with people who are standing up for their rights, when they're discovering that power and that voice inside themselves, and for the first time speaking up and standing up, there is just something precious and brilliant that you experience, that you hear. It has been my great privilege and gift just to be close to people in those moments.
Cy, I've had so many people call in and send me email, and they more or less said some of the music I play or some of the things I say. They thought that they were the only ones out there thought that way, or the only time they heard that kind of music, and they realized they are not alone. And I think that happens a lot. People think they're alone, and they're really not. And a lot of the media out there is – just so, you know, bland. It's, you know, it's commercial. And this is the beauty of public radio. And one chore of public radio I've got to do right now is mention our underwriters.
Oh, nice transition, Norm. Very skillful, buddy.
Support for WYSO comes from listeners like you and the Dayton City Paper, covering arts, culture, and entertainment on Miami Valley newsstands every Wednesday. This week's edition spotlights scene-stealing wine, a study in wine perception, Dayton Contemporary Dance Company's Holiday Happenings Show, comedian Brad Williams at the Funny Bone, and more online at DaytonCityPaper.com. The Dayton City Paper. Look no further, look deeper. Here's a little brief announcement.
Whether it's something you heard in a newscast, a story that stuck with you, or a song that you can't get out of your head, we want to hear about it. Call the WYSO listener line at 769-1374 and leave us your comments. This is your radio station, so tell us what you think. 769-1374.
And support for WYSO comes from listeners like you and Young's Jersey Dairy and the Golden Jersey Inn. Offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, Young's features home-style country cooked meals, ice cream and bakery products, as well as holiday gift cards. Located 1 mile north of Yellow Springs on Route 68, menus and information are online at youngsdairy.com. And the Greene County Public Library, exploring the world of Harry Potter and its roots in Renaissance magic, science, and medicine during an exhibit running now through Saturday, December 11th at Xenia Community Library on Market Street in Xenia. More information is available online at greenlibrary.info. And here's another brief announcement.
This Sunday night, a celebration of Yiddish radio. At one time, Yiddish language radio was heard from coast to coast. Now, all that survives are 1,000 fragile discs rescued from attics and storerooms and dumpsters. The Yiddish Radio Project Holiday Special is a celebration of these unforgettable recordings and the geniuses and dreamers who created them. That's Sunday night at 6 o'clock on WYSO.
And today's weather calls for an 80% chance of snow, 30% chance of snow tonight, low around 23. Sunday, 30% chance of snow, high around 30. Sunday night, 30% chance of snow, low around 20. Monday, 20% chance of snow, high around 26. Monday night, 20% chance of snow, low around 16. And by the time we get to Tuesday, with all the snow coming down, we may be buried, who can say? Anyway, you're listening to member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and on the internet at WYSO.org, broadcasting in HD. WYSO is a service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Here's another brief announcement, then we're going to just jump right back into the music.